Christopher Springman, and you're listening to Body Language. Are you part of the herd? By that I mean the herd immunity created by the advent of vaccines. You ever wonder why we don't hear much about, or anything about, polio these days, or diphtheria, smallpox, whooping cough, rubella, or measles? Measles. Well, it's back. In fact, it never went away. It was just suppressed. And the reason it's back in Wales in the UK and Brooklyn, New York, is that the vaccination rates have dropped to the point where the herd immunity has been partially emasculated. Not a pretty word, not a pretty disease. Now, even though our guest is 3,000 miles away, I can feel him shaking his head in frustration. He is physician and author Dr. Paul Offit, chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases and director of the Vaccine Education Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. His new book is Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. Dr. Offit, welcome to Body Language.
Thank you.
Can you make sense of the measles outbreaks in Wales and Brooklyn? What's going on?
Yeah, it's exactly what you said. The people became scared of the measles vaccine. They became scared in large part because there was a British surgeon named Andrew Wakefield who created the notion that the combination measles, mumps, rubella, or MMR vaccine caused autism. And although study after study after study has shown that that was wrong, it's hard to unring the bell. I think once you've scared people, it's hard to unscare them. And a lot of people choose not to get that vaccine because they think that's a choice not to get autism, or in fact, it's not that choice at all. It's simply a choice to increase one's risk of getting measles. So now we're seeing outbreaks of this very contagious disease.
Vaccines are one of the three triumphs, and this is my opinion, of public health, certainly in the United States, along with clean water and sanitation. How did we go so wrong? Where is the concept of shared risk and shared reward versus that pharmaceutical company isn't going to experiment on my kid? I don't want to listen to the FDA. The CDC ain't going to give me orders. What's going on in this country, doctor?
I think we're compelled by fear far more than we're compelled by reason. You didn't have to convince my parents to get vaccines. They saw children die in the 1920s of diphtheria, commonly. You didn't have to convince me to get vaccines. I had many of these diseases as a child. Fortunately, I survived them, but I know what they felt like. But for my children, who were 18 and 20, it's not only that they didn't, see these diseases, they don't see these diseases now. They didn't grow up with these diseases. So for them, vaccination is a matter of faith. And, and people, faith in whom? Faith in pharmaceutical companies, faith in the medical establishment, faith in regulatory agencies and the FDA. And I think there's an erosion, at least in that kind of faith. So
that's one of the problems with vaccines in general. It's sort of like having an effective fire department, which has training programs, prevention programs, inspections. No one wakes up on Monday morning and says, gee, there are fewer fires this year than last. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. The problem, and you're alluding to this, with the effectiveness, the public health effectiveness of vaccine programs, is that people can't see the difference. They accept the absence of disease as a norm. Am I on to something there, or am I on the right path at least?
That's exactly right. I think vaccines are a victim of their own success. I mean, when vaccines work, nothing happens. Absolutely nothing happens. And although my children are both fully vaccinated, not surprisingly, I never really considered that they would ever really get one of these diseases. I didn't think, okay, great, now they won't get this disease, because you just never think that way. You assume it's never going to happen to you until it happens to you. And then when it happens to you, you become part of a parent advocacy group like Families Fighting Flu or Meningitis Angels. All those people tell the same story. I can't believe this happened to my child. And then they become vigorous activists. And, you want to try and avoid that.
Before my daughter ran off to Wellesley and later to MIT, I had her vaccinated for meningococcal meningitis. Because in that kind of dormitory environment, much like a summer camp, that medical condition occurs. And she said, oh, God, you're such a worrywart, Dad. All right, I'll get the shot. Well, 2 months later, a kid at a Boston college died of that. You're right. When the chickens come home to roost, they do crow rather loudly, probably a bad analogy. But it's, if you can't see it, it doesn't mean that it isn't there.
Right, and just because it's rare doesn't mean that it's not real. I mean, there are still, several hundred people every, year who suffer meningococcus and occasionally die from it. There's one story which is probably the most gruesome, is a guy who's now a member of a group called the National Meningitis Association, which, you know, supports people whose children have suffered or died from this disease. And this particular guy wanted to immunize his son. His son was about to go off to college, so he took him to, I think he was affiliated with the Army, he took him to his Army base, which didn't have the vaccine at the time. And so then he waited a couple weeks, and he went back, didn't have the vaccine. Then the child goes to college and catches meningococcus and dies. I mean, he tried twice to get him that vaccine, and then the child died. I mean, imagine living with that.
Well, here's a story out of Wales. When the telltale rash appeared behind Alicia's ears, her grandmother knew exactly what it was, a decision she had made 15 years earlier. Ms. Jenkins was an infant in 1998 when this region of southwest Wales was a hotbed of resistance to a vaccine for MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella. Many here refused the vaccine for their children after a British doctor, whom you mentioned earlier, suggested it might cause autism, and a local newspaper heavily covered the fears. Resistance continued even after the autism link was disapproved or debunked. The bill has now come due, and there is hell to pay in Wales.
Yes, that's exactly right. I mean, they made a choice to expose their children, and now this very contagious disease is spreading like wildfire, and there's been at least one death in Wales associated with this. You know, you wonder whether there's journalistic malpractice. I mean, they covered something that was clearly wrong. Very soon after that story came out, we knew it was wrong, and yet they still trumpeted it because it was good. You know, I guess it was good copy. But now, you know, are they responsible? At some level, are those people who kept trumpeting this responsible?
That's a very good question, probably a question for another day that I'll be evasive and elusive here. You helped develop a vaccine called the rotavirus, is that correct?
Yeah.
Tell us about that and what the positive consequences have been of that vaccine.
Right, so rotavirus is a virus that infects the stomach and small intestine of young children. It causes fever and vomiting and diarrhea. In the United States, accounted prior to the vaccine being introduced for about 70,000 children being hospitalized with severe dehydration and about 60 children dying every year. In the world, it's probably the single biggest infectious disease killer of young infants, killing about 2,000 children a day.
Wait. 2,000 children a day?
That's right.
Times 365 times how many years has the vaccine been around?
So the vaccine came out in 2006.
So many lives have been saved.
Yeah, you know, it was a massive effort. I mean, it certainly was an education for me. It took 10 years, really, to do the research here at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia with the team here to essentially create the strains that became the vaccine. And then it took another 15 years in the company that we work with, which was Merck, to do the research of development. And now it's in the implementation phase. But it's in Africa and Asia and Latin America, and it's definitely saving lives.
I'm going to give you the last word because you deserve this. What would you like to say to parents who are sitting on the fence about vaccinating their children, adults who are concerned about adult vaccinations? In fact, I just had Zostavax the other day. It's just fine with me. What would you say to those parents? How would you persuade people to move towards the vaccination side?
A choice not to get a vaccine is not a risk-free choice. It's a choice to take a different and more serious risk. And you should know what that other risk looks like. Hopefully, you'll never have to experience what that other risk looks like. But I work in a hospital, and I see these children come in pretty much every time I'm on service with vaccine-preventable diseases. And, you know, medicine's limited as it is, but it's not limited here. It's the easy choice to make. You know, as a your job as a parent is to put your child in the safest position possible. That's what vaccines do.
Our guest has been Dr. Paul Offit, Chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases and Director of the Vaccine Education Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. He is also the author of a wonderful book that kept me up all night, damn it, but it's a great read. It's entitled, Do You Believe in Magic? The Sense and Nonsense of Alternative Medicine. Dr. Offit, how can people learn more about you and your work?
Right. My wife made me put up an author's website. So it's paul-offit, O-F-F-I-T.
.com.
.com. Yes, that's it.
Dr. Offit, thank you so much for joining us today on Body Language on Radio MD.
Thank you.
Be well.